What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Grant and Danny getting you ready for football tonight. The Commanders and the Bengals on Monday Night Football from Northwest Stadium. I'm live right now, sitting at press level in the end zone. Danny's back in our studios, and we're pleased right now to go to the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. And welcome onto the show our buddy Joel Corey, a former sports agent who is an expert on all things NFL contracts and salary cap. Joel, it's good to have you back on in D.C. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Very well.
We're well. We're not convinced that Terry McLaurin and the Commanders are closer to a contract than they were a week or two ago, even though he is now off the PUP list and he's not going to be allowed to continue to kind of rehab in perpetuity. What do you make of where we are in this never-ending saga?
So I'm a little surprised that there hasn't been an agreement reached. One thing I'm curious to see is whether he's now going to have a hold-in since he is past the physical as opposed to getting cover for what potentially would have been a hold-in, because you can't do anything until you pass the physical. So that'll be telling to me. Is he out there going through full practice or trying to ramp up to practice, or is it going to be like Trey Hendrickson and nope, until a deal's done, I'm not doing anything?
Joel, what's his recourse, talking about McLaurin's recourse, now that I guess all parties agree that he's healthy? I don't know if that's the case. You can correct me if I'm wrong there. But so what sort of could happen now on his end? What kind of levers do he and his agent have left to pull?
That's called the hold-in. And we saw last year with the 49ers that Trent Williams holding out didn't bother Kyle Shanahan as much as Brandon Ayuk holding in. Because in that situation, and there was more drama in that one than this one, that Ayuk wasn't practicing until he was either getting a contract or was traded to someplace of satisfaction. And the out of sight, out of mind thing seemed to be what Shanahan preferred as opposed to a healthy Brandon Ayuk being a distraction.
Joel Corey on Grant and Danny with us here on The Fan. So, Joel, I get that if he holds out, you can fine him $50,000 a day, and it's $811,000 if you don't play in a game like tonight. But when he holds in, especially when he's on the PUP list like he has been, he doesn't have to worry as much about the fines. How does that work from the team standpoint, though? You know, are they able to fine him for conduct detrimental? When can, and how does that work for them to start levying fines if they say, you're ready to practice, take him off the PUP list, but he still refuses to?
Yeah, well, teams have a lot of recourse. Most of them, for a core player they're trying to negotiate a new contract with, don't exercise their rights. The first thing you should do as a team is put in writing, spell out what the issue is. And in this particular case, one thing you could do is cite paragraph 2 of the NFL player contract. That's the employments and services paragraph. The most relevant portions is to give best efforts and loyalty. Player will report promptly for and participate fully in the mini camp, preseason training camp, all meetings, practice sessions, all preseason, regular season, postseason games scheduled by the club. And also Article 42, which is handles club discipline, and treat a practice where you aren't a participant as a missed practice. And there's a different fine amount for that for the regular season and also the preseason. It's less than the $50,000 per day fine. And also warning the player that they could be fined for conduct detrimental. The maximum fine for conduct detrimental is 1 week's salary and a suspension of 4 games. and suspensions aren't paid.
I got Joel Corey with us here on Grant and Danny. Joel, you wrote for CBS kind of an outside-the-box explanation or you know, idea here for the contract. Let folks know what you were thinking.
Yeah, it is outside the box. The two sides are having a fundamental disagreement on value where they're not close. Maybe try to me, I've heard from an agent and also team execs that sometimes the right deal is one where both sides are a little uncomfortable or neither side is particularly happy with it. So from the base value, you come up with a compromise amount and then kind of make a bet on who's right. McLaurin wanting $33 million per year or the Commanders wanting a lot less. And there's a salary escalator, which you see in a fair amount of NFL contracts, and the very uncommon salary de-escalator, where if a player doesn't achieve a certain statistical level, then he's going to lose money. But there's a way to extinguish the escalator by hitting something in the escalator. And the escalator has to be high enough where it's something that wouldn't be easily achievable. So that's just the basic concept of the thinking outside the box idea.
Salary cap expert and contracts expert on the NFL business, Joel Corey, is with us on Grant and Danny. Joel, who do you think is more right? If the numbers that we're assuming, based on reports, are correct, the team saying that McLaurin should be down around $25 million per year, or the player who wants $33 or more million per year?
I think McLaurin's a little more right in this case. I think you're going to have a hard time if he comes off that 33 number, which I think he needs to just because DK Metcalf, I understand why he's there. DK Metcalf is 2 years younger, and you are slightly more productive, but he's a physical freak in nature. Highest paid number two receiver is T. Higgins at $28.75 million per year. Granted, he might be a number one on a whole bunch of other teams if he got into the open market or forced to trade off of the franchise tag, but in Cincinnati, he's a number two receiver. Second highest paid number two receiver is Jalen Waddle with $28.25 million per year. So you get above that, then I think you got something to work with. If the Commanders aren't going there, then I don't know how you're going to get a deal done. One thing that McLaurin's camp should be asking them is what production do you expect from Terry McLaurin at $25 million per year on a go-forward basis, since you're paying him for what you expect him to do, not for what he has done in the past. And based on that answer, that can give the agent some ammunition to work with to try to refute what the Commanders are thinking or show the production for what they're talking about is more in line with potentially what the Commanders are thinking. So that would be a key question I would ask.
Joel, in your estimation, outside looking in, has somebody misread this situation? Thinking from the team side, maybe underestimated how, you know, maybe dug in the agent, the player are, and the agent maybe underestimated the team in some way. Has anybody kind of misevaluated in your view?
Yeah, I think both have. Mm-hmm. One, I think there was the false security from the agent. We got a deal done last time in June. We can get one done fairly quickly. But this is a different regime, and how they think about things isn't the same as when you did the contract in 2022. And two, from the team standpoint, you don't pay anybody really on this team if you look at it. Highest paid player is someone you just acquired in a trade, Laremy Tunsil. You have to redo him next year at the latest. You got a rookie quarterback, so if there's ever a time you are going to, quote-unquote, overpay someone, now is the time since you are in a Super Bowl window with a cheap quarterback.
Joel, am I wrong to say this, though? I feel like other than the Gold Jacket Hall of Fame types, Devontae Adams or somebody, there's not really a precedent for a guy McLaurin's age getting what he's asking for. Now, I know what his agent's saying. His agent's saying, don't worry about the age. We're going into year 7 and 8, and that's when guys get paid. And the team disagrees. They're going, yeah, they do get paid then, but you're older. And that's how they're on different pages. But am I missing one? Like Mike Evans, Cortland Sutton. I know Terry's a better player than Cortland Sutton. But the market for an older guy is the market, right? Who's gotten paid at his age that isn't, you know, one of the greats at the position over the last bunch of years?
Well, the agent should contend Mike Evans took a hometown discount to stay put because that deal was done before free agency and he's a little bit older. You can explain away Sutton because last year is an outlier if you look at his career. Was he really the number one receiver prior to Jerry Jeudy getting traded? That's why I would get back to what are you expecting him to do on a go-forward basis? You tell me what you expect out of him. Is it what he's been doing in the past? Is it a slight reduction, 70 catches, 900 yards? You tell me what you think this $25 million per year is worth, and then I'm going to take whatever you numbers you think that he's going to put up and look at what the average production, the average salary is for that production and go from there. But that's why I think that's a key point to ask. But you are right that from the standpoint of recently – the older receivers haven't gotten paid. But if you're expecting him to be the same player he is, which is the player he was when he signed a lot younger, then that supports the idea that maybe you should be paying him a lot more than you're offering.
Joel, in your time as an agent, the complicated part of this is we're talking about a future contract when Terry is under contract for this year. So sort of regardless, he owes a season. And I know that's his only leverage to kind of guarantee that future deal. But when would you advise or what kind of dialogue would you be having at this point where you go, hey, you got to still play this year, right, if we want to get the things that we want to get? Like, walk us through that, what might be going on right now.
Yeah, you have to give your player the worst-case scenario or the downside in a situation, because really, Terry doesn't have a lot of leverage. His leverage is this team isn't what it will be with him fully out there. He's your deep threat. I know Debo has flashed that during training camp, but he's really a run-after-catch guy, underneath guy. So if you guys are going to get to where you want to go, you really are going to need a fully invested Terry. But at the same time, he's got to look at what's my alternative to signing. A potential franchise tag next year, which will be slightly over $30 million. And then if you play that out, you're going to be, because next year you'll be, that's your season of 31, you'd be 32. That's not an optimal situation either. So at some point, if you haven't already, you got to come off of this $33 million per year number. Yeah, I understand why you want it. You're not getting it. And try to come up with a deal you can live with that you think the Commanders can live with.
Is there something to be said for, and I know you've been on the agent side primarily throughout your career, but the Commanders could tag him, as you just said, at 30 and basically have him at 2 years and $55 million for the years that they want him for, even though it's a hard bargain and I don't love how we've gotten here, that Peters is doing not only the right thing but a really smart team thing. Just – sit back, do nothing, tag him next year. He can be unhappy, but he'll be unhappy here.
Yeah, but do you really want a Terry McLaurin who decides to me, most players aren't healthy by midseason, and they ignore injuries to play football. You really want him, well, you know what? I'm hurt. I'm not playing through this, something you could have played through otherwise, and your season starts to go sideways. That can kind of be cutting off your nose to spite your face for him. But it wouldn't be the first time a player has decided, I'm going to try to preserve myself. And then that takes away his argument that durability is not a concern. So it could go sideways in a lot of manners.
This is also, and Joel Corey with us here on Grant and Danny, it's partly a game of chicken. You're hoping that somebody blinks first or somebody kind of backs down and then, you know, sort of crosses that line there in the middle. What's the clock look like here as we're starting to look at the regular season a few weeks away? The preseason schedule is kind of odd. They don't play a real game for 3 weeks, but it is 3 weeks away, and he hasn't done much just yet. How could you sort of see this playing out with that kind of, you know, ticking 60-minute style clock in the background?
Well, he's got to figure out how long do I need to be ready to play and be the player I've been throughout my career so far. I think on one level, the new regime has proven their point. They can drive a hard bargain. I know one of their concerns has probably been, this is our first big negotiation. We don't want to set the tone that we can be pushovers or we can be taken advantage of. I don't think anybody's going to say that, regardless of what you get if there's a long-term deal consummated by the two sides. But he's got to figure out, when do I really need to start going to play football? Because he can't sit out the whole year. His contract would toll. One, he can't leave, because then that becomes a whole other issue, because you could be sent a 5-day letter. And if you don't come back at the end of the 5-day period, the team has the option to put you on the reserve left squad list, and your season is over.
So let's get a prediction from you before we let you go. And our contract and salary cap expert, Joel Corey, always great here on Grant and Danny. You see his work on CBS, and he is just so sharp as a former agent on all of these matters and helps us navigate them. So give us a prediction on how you think this ends, contract, no contract, what it would look like. And then also, if you don't mind, just for my own curiosity, he's off PUP, but they haven't had a practice yet, really. Do you think he's going to practice as soon as he can now that he's off PUP, and that was mutual, or do you think that's just the team taking him off PUP and it won't change anything?
I'll address the contract part first. I think a deal gets done. I think it's a 3-year extension, so that runs New Year's 26, 27, 28. Whatever's in the first 2 years of the contract, 25 and 26, will be fully guaranteed at signing. The question is where there'll be any guarantee in 2027, and when does that vest, in 2027 or 2026? I think it's a deal that both teams don't love. It's slightly over T. Higgins. Maybe there's some incentives and escalators where he can get closer to what he wants. I don't think he practices initially. I could be wrong, since he's off PUP, because then it's a hold-in, unless the two sides are starting to make movement and get close, and then he might feel better about practicing initially. But at some point, it wouldn't surprise me if the Commanders decided to start exercising their rights, which most teams don't in these situations with a hold-in.
Joel, awesome as always, man. Really appreciate it. Talk soon.
Thank you.
Great insight from Joel Corey. If you're just joining us and you're thinking, well, wait a second, I thought he's off PUP. I thought that was the big story of the weekend. He is, and it certainly did get talked about, from what I gathered, as if this thing was over. The long national nightmare has ended. Terry McLaurin has shown back up to work. I'm not viewing it that way. It's possible he could practice on Wednesday and Thursday. We'll see. But all that happened really is the team has been saying that they listed him physically unable to perform with the ankle. They have now deemed him able to perform, and he's still going to have to make the choice as to whether or not he is willing to do that. But tonight, Danny, for one night only, Bengals in town, Monday Night Football, we got bigger fish to fry. Who are we excited to see take the field and get out here on this wet surface tonight where the rain is falling at Northwest Stadium? That's next on Grant and Danny.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
The rain has picked up a bit. It is continuing to fall at Northwest Stadium in Landover, Maryland. That's where I'm joining you live today on Grant and Danny. Danny's back in our D.C. studios. Danny, let's go back and forth here on some of the guys we're excited to watch tonight. We do have a list of players that will not participate, including on offense, Terry McLaurin and Noah Brown at wide receiver. On the offensive line, no Laremy Tunsil or Brandon Coleman, still dealing with an injury. Obviously, right guard Sam Cosmi is still unavailable with his injury. Zach Ertz is also not going to participate, the tight end. So Jaden Daniels will be out there without his left tackle, left guard, right guard, top tight end, and top couple of wide receivers. Can't imagine he'll play a whole lot with that being the case. Defensively, the Commanders are not going to have Bobby Wagner, their Mike linebacker, on the field. Von Miller, their lead pass rusher they brought in, closer to 40 than 30. He will also not play tonight. But otherwise, of the 30 participants that missed out on the Patriots game, the vast majority will be on the field tonight. So give me the number one guy on your list of players to watch.
Trey Amos, come on down. I can't wait. What a test. Maybe the best receiver in the NFL. If he's not, he's second. Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, you're going to see a challenge tonight for the secondary, for any secondary, quite frankly. Those guys combined for around 3,000 yards or so last year. They're incredible, and this is as tough as it gets. A great passing game for as long as they're in. That will be the hardest you get tested probably all season long. I want to see the kid.
He's right at the top of my list as well. I'll stay with the theme, though. I mean, same story for Marshawn Lattimore, right? He's going to run with Ja'Marr Chase. He's going to be asked to flip his hips and turn and get back deep with T. Higgins or whoever it is. He's going to cover on a deep cross or a dig in route, and he's going to have to plant on this wet surface and move around. When we last saw him at the end of last year, it wasn't pretty. But this team is betting big on a bounce back, and now we get to see him take on high-end wide receivers in this game. That'll be fun. I'll give you one on offense as well. Jalen Lane did not really do much in the preseason game against the Patriots. Not his fault, just wasn't involved. Ball didn't come his way and didn't really have a chance to make a play or to have his moment, his opportunity to break out. Maybe that comes tonight. Is it a punt return? Is it a kick return? I do think as a wide receiver you're going to see them involve him. I'd be stunned if they don't get him the ball in a couple of screens just to try to get him in space, to give him the chance he didn't get against the Patriots to make a play. He becomes very important at wide receiver, though, Danny. When you don't have McLaurin still and you don't have Noah Brown, it's Deebo Samuel, Jalen Lane as your front runners in camp that have had strong practice sessions. And so I want to see him in a game working against starters.
Javon Kinlaw, come on down. He's been one of the quiet talks of camp. You've heard a few folks say that how thrilled they are with him. They're betting big on Javon Kinlaw. They did not go after established stars or kind of a high-end open market. They went against a guy that, frankly, is underachieved. His story is incredible. Adam Kilbourn did a wonderful piece on his background and what he's overcome to have been here, but his pro career has not been a smash hit. This is a guy that obviously Adam Peters and company know from previous stops. And he was readily available, and they're paying him like a front-end defensive tackle. You would think you would be able to see him. I just want to see what all the reason for the excitement on their part is, right? I mean, in the past, he's been kind of a space eater. I mean, he's a monster of a man. He's enormous. I want to see some of the havoc wreaking. I want to see some of the bothering of the offense, some of the, quite frankly, disruptive tendencies that you pay a guy like that for.
I'll take the low-hanging fruit here. The story of the day we've talked about more than anything else on the show is Brian Robinson might be traded, and if he's not, is he going to make the team? As of today, I would say no, he's unlikely to, based on the fact that this report came out from Mike Garafolo that the team and the player mutually agreed that he wouldn't play tonight as they shop him. Well, the beneficiary there is Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt. He might become your starting running back for the Commanders at this point. He led the team with 7 carries against the Patriots a week ago, had 24 yards, popped up a 9-yard run at one point. I thought he looked really good. There were 2 particular carries that I loved that I posted on Instagram if you want to go check those out, where he made some really nice explosive jump cuts at the line of scrimmage. But he also had 1 catch against the Patriots for 8 yards where he made a guy miss in the open field, got to the sideline, and picked up a first down. How many touches does he get tonight? I'm thinking it'll be something like, 6 to 8. It would be really telling, though, if he only plays a drive and then he comes off, and then it's the Demetric Felton, Chris Rodriguez show. Now you know. They're putting him in the bubble wrap. He's getting the treatment as if he's Jaden Daniels in this first-team offense. So I'm watching to just see what the workload looks like, and I'd love to see him flash a couple more times tonight.
I co-sign that one. Ben Sinnott, no Zach Ertz tonight. I need to know. They took this dude in the second round, and Adam Peters said this is Kyle Juszczyk and George Kittle. That's a pretty big standard to try to bear for a guy that didn't do an awful lot last year. I understand why. John Bates is the great inline blocker who they are paying like an extra offensive lineman. Zach Ertz was awesome, kind of a renaissance here for a guy that was almost out of football. So I'm not necessarily blaming him, but at the same time, I kind of am. If you were good enough, you'd crack the field. They'd find a way to have you, you know, get more touches than a Dyami Brown or a Lamide Zaccheaus or Jamison Crowder, etc. This is an opportunity for him to showcase his wares. Again, last year in the preseason, we saw him catch and rumble and knock a couple guys stiff as he was getting, you know, matriculating down the field on a catch or two. But I just want to see some of the skill set that had this group so excited that they drafted him in the second round. Very little positive sample in regular season games. This is a chance for him.
I thought the guy that may have played the best of any of Washington's defenders in New England was Jeremy Reeves. And subsequently, I don't know if you saw the clip from Joe Witt Jr. when he spoke to the media, but he said Jeremy Reeves is their third safety now, meaning he's surpassed Percy Butler. But on top of that, he said he's going to play a lot more on defense this year. He's earned it. He says it's hard to get him in there as much as we'd like to because he's so valuable and so important on special teams. But if you really want to be this team where your slogan is the way we play is not for everybody, you know, we're going to arrive violently, nobody embodies that more than Jeremy Reeves, who flies around. Every tackle is loud and angry. He had four stops, broke up a pass in the end zone, really shined against the Patriots. I want to see if he can make it two in a row tonight because he is closing in on legitimate playing time on defense for the first time in a several-year stay here in D.C., one of the longest-tenured players on the team now. And it's exclusively almost solely been special teams. He might be able to change that if he continues to elevate his game on defense.
Just kind of funny sign of the times where we haven't mentioned our first-round draft pick yet in terms of players we're excited to see, and especially a bunch of the young players. But Josh Connelly, I want to see more of what I saw in preseason game number one, where you look at an athlete, look at a guy that is making it happen, maybe without some of the fine-tuning and all the pro technique and things like that, but getting away with things because he's such a special athlete in space, moving, handling some of the pass rush, getting to the second level on some of those plays. Because you know the way they want to run this offense. It's get something close to the line of scrimmage, then let's all have a cavalcade of stars rumbling down the field with some lead blockers out there. And that's what Connerly's skill set would lend itself to. I just want to see more from him.
Ja'Cory Brooks, 5 targets, 5 catches, 59 yards against the Patriots, long of 16. He led the team with those 59 receiving yards. In fact, in that game, remember, there were 2 drops from Chris Moore. There were 2 drops from K.J. Osborne. Neither of those guys helped their cause a whole lot in terms of that veteran group. The one guy that may have was Michael Gallup, who caught 2 balls for 27 yards. But even in his case, there were 4 targeted incompletions his way. Brooks was the statistical leader in the wide receiver room. He's interesting. He had a really great start to training camp. Overall, I'd say he's been fine. He's had a few drops that I've seen that bothered me, but otherwise, like, this is a exciting, high-ceiling player, I think. Undrafted free agent out of Louisville. If you're going to keep an extra receiver around from the back of this roster, would you rather it be someone like Michael Gallup, who's been in the league for years, or a K.J. Osborne, who's a bit of a journeyman at this point? Or would you rather roll the dice and see what Ja'Cory Brooks, who's huge, can give you? Danny is 6'3", 200 pounds. I mean, they haven't had a lot of guys with his size. He can box people out and go up and get rebounds. So I like him. I think he's had a good camp, and I want to see him put 2 games together here after a strong showing against the Pats.
Same position, different dude. Give me Luke McCaffrey. At one point, it looked like there was something promising there, right? I mean, he wasn't getting the ball a ton early in the season, but the metrics kept telling you, hey, he's open, just sort of a matter of time as Jaden Daniels goes to Terry McLaurin, Zach Ertz, the kind of plays point guard with everybody else, and then the catches and opportunities and targets dropped off. The seas have parted. There is no McLaurin. We've discussed that a little bit. You may have heard some. There's no Noah Brown. There shouldn't be anybody in your way at this point, in the preseason at least. Let's get a few targets. Let's get a few of those things that were so promised. And for a guy, again, they took a third-round pick on for someone that didn't have a ton of receiver experience, a converted quarterback. Now's the time to kind of continue to show your wares, grow into the position. So idiots like me feel a bit more comfortable going into the season with him as your 3 or your 4 or whatever the number you want to assign.
Kane Medrano, linebacker from UCLA. The team didn't have a ton of contact with him before the draft, from what Medrano told me. He was a little surprised that they took him, but they didn't really need to because he has a very good relationship with and played for Ken Norton Jr., the former UCLA star, when he was coaching there, and Kane was in his early years in the program. I think they knew what they were getting. He had some really awesome reps against the Patriots. There was this play on a run, basically straight downhill, with the starters in the game, and I think it was Drake May giving directly to one of the two lead tailbacks in that organization. And Medrano comes downhill, hits the center, drives him into the backfield, then knocks the guard down and makes the tackle. Just a really violent, physical, willing play. There was another power toss where going around the edge in the low red zone, you know, down near the goal line, Patriots had an angle, and he blew up a lead blocker to help push the back toward the sideline. You could just tell that's a dude that likes throwing his weight around and is going to be a willing, physical player in the run game.
Football Talk on the Fan is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus. All season long, visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. GP, a couple more other guys that kind of come to mind. I want to see more from Will Harris, right? This is a dude that, you know, was a journeyman. Jerry was just sort of around a couple different stops. Increased role here with Washington. And I kind of want to see more of that downhill sort of thumping. How was he in coverage? Again, a great test this week against, you know, some really athletic, excellent wide receivers. I haven't actually checked to see if Chase Brown is going tonight for Cincinnati, but I would assume he is. Again, a dangerous triumvirate in terms of athletic scat back or great receiver, yards after the catch type dudes. A really difficult test for the secondary. I want to see more from Will Harris.
Who are you guys excited to see take the field for the Commanders tonight? You can tweet us at Grant H. Paulson, at Funny Danny. We'll read some of those responses. We can take your calls at 800-636-1067. I want to get into some position groups the spotlight could be on. And one commander we didn't talk about, who actually really needs to have a night that goes smoothly this evening, that's next on The Fan.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
So some of the media was downstairs watching players come into the stadium so that they could get their arrival shots. NBC4, I see our buddy J.P. Finley and Scott Abraham of Channel 7 as well. And it's been noted that Terry McLaurin and Brian Robinson have not gotten to the stadium. Now, Scott Abraham of Channel 7 is saying he's not here tonight, and unless he's kind of gotten that intel from someone else. I don't know. It's only 5:46, like how we would know definitively that Terry McLaurin is not going to be here. If you told me that Brian Robinson's not, I would understand that. It sounds like they want to trade him. He's not going to play in this game. There's a little bit of animosity growing, perhaps, and we've seen him maybe play his final down here. The Terry McLaurin situation is different. He's been taken off of the PUP list. He is holding in, but it would be strange if he was not at the game. So curious to see, as we get closer to kickoff, Danny, what we find out, but it sounds like as of right now, both B-Rob and McLaurin, when players showed up and got into the locker room, were not among them.
Yeah, if McLaurin doesn't show up, I think that tells us all we need to know about the nature of the move of take him off PUP list, right? It was team procedural, escalate the conflict. I would hate that, to be honest with you. I understand you're not playing. No one would have thought you would have played, given the fact you got activated off PUP, you know, 24 hours ago, whatever it was, 48 hours ago. But the idea that you wouldn't be there with your teammates, that doesn't sit very well with me, to be honest with you.
Yeah, at some point, I mean, we got to start.
If that's the case.
Yes. And we're working on a hypothetical here where supposedly he did not show up during the period where players are showing up. I think it's very possible he could stroll in at any point between now and kickoff. But if it works out that Scott Abraham's correct and Terry McLaurin's not going to be on site tonight, then it's one step closer to, for me, eventually, and I've said I'm waiting until probably like a week from now, but man, the clock is ticking. The sand is dropping to the bottom of the hourglass here. A real escalation in my rhetoric toward him, which is He's been a great dude and a good professional for a long, long time. This is business. This is how the sausage gets made. It's ugly. But there are just certain expectations. You can hold out and you could be here sitting in a suite. You could sit on the sideline, on the bench, and talk to Jaden Daniels. If he doesn't come to the game, that would be a whole different ball of yarn. But, again, I'm not willing to sit here at 5:48 before an 8 o'clock kickoff and say definitively that that's not happening just because they didn't see him walk into the locker room yet.
Yeah, to me, this is – it's awkward because we don't know. I mean, I'm looking at J.P. Finley's Twitter, Scott Abraham, where this, hey, we didn't see him. Now, if that means he took another route and, as you said, went up to a suite or away from prying eyes, whatever. But the idea that even with that he wouldn't be there on the sideline with his teammates, because at a certain point, you know, when you're holding in or you're doing this charade of an ankle injury, you're still supposedly in meetings with the guys, going to your position group, going over things, and you can still be helpful, still be the mentor, still be the guy that's done at a high level to the Luke McCaffreys of the world, to the Jaylen Lanes of the world. You could still be in with your team. That's not that is not good in my view. So again, if he's not down there on the sideline come game time, I'm going to have some strong words and an opinion tomorrow. Not that he cares about that at all, but that'll irritate me pretty good.
Yeah, at some point you got to start realizing that the 2025 season matters, and that you got to help the football operation as much as you want to get paid, and I understand that. You can have your cake and eat it too here, where you can continue this hold-in in a way that tries to put pressure on the team, and that doesn't mean that you can't do some things that would be still a benefit to the ball club. But we'll get into that when we have all the information mm-hmm. we need to really have that conversation. I'm not comfortable having it just yet. Fourth and 11 from the 31-yard line in New England in the early going of preseason game one. Matt Gay trots out onto the field for his first field goal attempt as a Commander, and he missed from 49 yards. Now, 49 is not a chip shot, okay? That's a long field goal. But 2 days of practices before that where he had struggled, then a missed field goal led to, over the weekend, about 10 days ago, the head coach, Dan Quinn, being asked, are you going to work out kickers? Matt Gay needs a good night tonight. He has had a much better week of practice, supposedly, from what happened in New England. When I saw him early in camp, he was completely automatic. He looked like a star. It didn't matter where you put him. Let's play tic-tac-toe. Let's line you up three rows deep on the 15-yard line, and there's going to be a guy standing right in front of you. You got to kick it off that wall and then go through the uprights. He was hitting it. So I was surprised with how quickly things got to a point where Quinn's being asked about bringing in kickers. But when all we see is that you missed in a game, you had a couple rough practices, it does change the conversation. So I would say he's a guy that if he went out tonight and missed a couple kicks in the rain, not ideal in a stadium that's not great to kick in, you could see them working some kickers out. I happen to believe he's really good. He had a great career with the Rams. He's going to be fine, but he needs to have a good night.
Yeah, there's too much track record there for me to say let's give up after a week of practice or I missed kicking a preseason game. Who knows where these guys are? It's preseason for everybody. So with kicker, we just sort of assume, yeah, kick the ball, dude, and that's it. There's no reading defenses. There's no game shape. It's just kick the football. But maybe there is. Maybe there are slow starts. I mean, I didn't go back and check his try to find articles historically about how he started preseasons or off seasons or training camps and the like. But there's too much good NFL track record for me to do anything other than feel perfectly fine that he's, you know, an above replacement level kicker and you know, that's kind of their solution to it. But if he's disastrous tonight, you could absolutely see some of those workouts. I'm thinking like out of bounds on a kickoff, you know, short on a 50-yarder, shanking one that's not even close. And you go, whether he's good or not, he is in an absolute funk right now. They need to do something else.
Well, I don't even think it has to be a disaster. Like, you're talking about a terrible game. I'm saying if he misses a kick tonight, that's going to be a topic. I mean, the way that several practices went and now multiple preseason games will have gone, they gave him a big contract, as you said, but you got to make kicks. Grant and Danny with you live from Northwest Stadium. Sam Hartman just walked back into the tunnel down on the field. Hartman, by the way, is another guy. You want to talk about players that need to have a better game.
Yeah.
I thought he sprayed the ball all over the place against the Patriots. Just wasn't very accurate. Now, he's a guy that I would think will be in the org and moving forward they would want to have around. He's got a great relationship with Jaden Daniels. He's a nice project at quarterback they can continue to hone in and develop. But is he a practice squad guy? Could he beat out Josh Johnson as the third quarterback if they really want to play this thing with the third QB on the roster being a long-term developmental QB rather than someone that could play in a month? Because there's really no path, in my opinion, to you being able to sell me on, you know, Hartman being a better guy than Josh Johnson to win a football game in September, October. But maybe as the third quarterback, that's not how they're viewing the position. Regardless, you got to make it easier on them to keep you, and you got to make the competition stiffer by just playing a better football game if you're Sam Hartman.
I think that's very well said. Yeah, I mean, to me, it's the third quarterback is what, you know, the meeting room. That's honestly what I care about at that point. If that guy plays, your season is a disaster, the plane is crashed into the mountain, there's no point to anything, you know, let me know about who they're going to draft. So to me, it's the, you know, how does that guy get along? How does that guy push the first two? How does that guy support the first two? You know, veteran-wise, et cetera. Can you run some of the, not practice squad, what's the thing, a scout team type stuff effectively? So to me, that third quarterback role is more about the dynamic between the top couple of guys than it is necessarily about that dude that's developmental. Is he going to turn into something? Respectfully to Sam Hartman, no. I'm not really that into the 26 or almost 27-year-old, I think is his age, guy as like a long-term project for something. If he's your answer, again, he'll be replaced by a 22-year-old, a 23-year-old out of the Big Ten or the SEC, et cetera. So, yeah, he could certainly use it to solidify his spot. Again, it's about that dynamic, and you can't have the drop-off be that bad.
Just over 2 hours away from kickoff, Zach Ertz just got a workout on the field. He's headed back toward the tunnel. Noah Brown is down there with the training staff. Some of the other Commanders who will not be participating in this game walking around the field. Many of the players starting to get loose out on the field as well. So if you're just joining us, notably Terry McLaurin, Brian Robinson, during the time where players were arriving, not at the facility just yet, reportedly. We'll continue to monitor that situation. Let's hit the big storylines for the Commanders ahead of their Monday night football game with the Bengals. We'll do that next. I'll also find a couple of the beat reporters covering the team up here in the box to catch up with in moments on The Fan.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.